Lucy Parsons. Welcome to this episode where we're discussing 5 common myths and misconceptions about how to revise English literature A-level. We've got Helen Chaplin here today, who's my lead academic coach, but she's also an incredibly good English teacher and tutor. I was chatting to one of her former colleagues the other day, and he was telling me how amazing she is and how all the other teachers were jealous of how good she is. So we're really lucky to have her here today for this podcast episode. So welcome back. You're the only guest, Helen, who has ever been on the show twice. So welcome back.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And I bet you're blushing after what I've just said.
Just a little bit. I do know the gentleman you're talking about, and he is also extremely good. So that's nice to have that comment.
Yeah, it's a great compliment from somebody like that, isn't it? Okay. Could you... We're going to run through these 5 things, common myths and misconceptions about how to revise English literature. So can you give us the first one, please, Helen?
Yeah, absolutely. When I was thinking about this, thinking, actually, what have I seen in the years of teaching A-level students trying to do? And where have I seen them maybe tying themselves in knots a little bit? And because of the nature of English literature, the first idea that I came up with to kind of overcome is this concept that the more notes you have, the better you're going to do in the exam, or the better you're going to do in the assessment. Because actually, the nature of English is that it's actually, the glory of it is, it's a huge subject. And therefore, if you wanted to, you could research one text, never mind one genre or one time period, almost indefinitely. And what we're going to look at in the podcast is actually kind of using the material that's out there really efficiently and really effectively to know where you're heading and how to rationalise that so you can get there, rather than giving into that temptation of starting to click away online or starting to kind of search around for study guides or so, ending up with a huge pile of material and then actually overwhelming yourself because you've made a position or you've created a position that says, well, I can't possibly get through all of this. How am I expected to? So it's kind of not taking it that the more notes, you know, the better. It's actually, what is my pathway through this material and why? What do I have to know? What am I enjoying finding out? And how can I deploy this really effectively?
Yeah, that's brilliant, because I get a lot of parents coming to me, and it's not just for English literature, but it's for all subjects, really. And, well, parents and students, and they think that the essence of revision is notes, and more notes. And it really isn't, is it? And, I think it's fabulous that you're talking about that, because you can overwhelm yourself if you have too much information. So you need to know what is the right information to make it as efficient as possible. Okay, what's the second myth or misconception people have about revising English literature A-level?
The second one is one that I've actually kind of had lots of discussions with kind of, and I can think of named students who I won't name, but the idea that you can actually get by on 1 or 2 pre-prepared essays, that you can kind of walk in thinking, well, I'm going to do this particular essay on Frankenstein, or whatever happens, I'm going to be able to twist my material to make it fit this question. And so I'm going to kind of take, it's almost the opposite kind of from the first point, this really over narrow approach that whatever happens, this is what I'm doing in the exam. What we'll look at is the kind of balance, is to say, well, yes, you know, you know your text, or you know your genre, you know the kind of ideas that the exam board are likely to ask you. Giving yourself that really good foundation in the characters, in the themes, in the ideas that the texts are playing with, but being able to think on your feet in an exam, because time and time again, we see in examiners' reports, we see in kind of comments on how students have done, is that, you know, paragraphs and paragraphs of pre-prepared material doesn't work. Being able to look at a question and modify and adapt what you do know is an absolutely kind of successful tactic that's going to kind of stand you in good stead.
Yeah, it's that ability to think flexibly, isn't it? Having sufficient command of the material that you can take it and use it in different situations, isn't it? Rather than being, you know, there's a way of being over-prepared in the wrong way, isn't there? There's a way of being under-prepared. Yeah. But there's a way of being just perfectly prepared. And that is like having the command of the knowledge, but being able to use it flexibly when you're in the exam. I think that's what you're saying, isn't
yes.
it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Okay, so what's the third point, the third myth or misconception about how to revise English literature?
I think this one kind of, it almost starts at GCSE and then grows into A-level as well. And that's this idea that there's an unseen element of my paper, be it poetry or be it prose. So, and I can't revise for it because I won't have seen it. And that isn't right. There are all sorts of different tactics, different strategies you need to kind of be master of for approaching an unseen text. Because although the text is going to be new to you, actually, depending on your paper, the ideas won't be. So what do you do with that approach? You might be asked to do some close reading. How do you make sure that you're covering all of those points? It really is that kind of sense of, okay, well, I know that I'm going to get something that I have to work with, but what do I have in my toolkit, if you like, to kind of match that, to meet that challenge? And it's that benefits from revision and practice. So in the podcast, we'll look at how you go about actually kind of practicing for an unseen paper and preparing for an unseen paper.
Okay, so the way I kind of see this, it's like giving you a framework to, in order to address things that you haven't seen before. And it reminds me of my daughter who wanted to be an experimental cook before she had learned the principles of cooking. So she basically wanted to create recipes before she really understood how different ingredients went together. And I had to explain to her, you know, I can kind of make my way up through making a recipe because I've got lots of experience of, you know, understanding that, you know, in a sauce, for example, you have a fat and you have a thickener, and then you have like a liquid that, you know, you can use to bulk it up or something like that. I understand that those are the three kind of main components of a sauce. So I understand that, you know, I could use olive oil or I could use a roux for a gravy or whatever. And from that kind of basic understanding, the framework, I can address that. And I think that's what you're saying about these unseen questions. You need a framework in which you go in and you look for those specific things in a question or in a text or an extract to be able to address that. Am I right?
Absolutely, yes. Kind of, if you go in there and you don't have a clue, as you say, if you don't know how the ingredients interact with each other, and what you're hoping to make as the end result, you don't really know where to start.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and you keep mentioning a podcast. we're talking about the A-Level English Literature Masterclass, which we're holding on Thursday, the 24th of September 2020, if you're listening to this in the future, which you're going to be doing live that evening. And you're going to be expanding on all of the points that we're talking about in this podcast today. So that students no longer have these myths and misconceptions, they can actually go ahead and revise for English in the most efficient and effective way possible. Isn't that right?
Right. Yes.
Okay, brilliant. So what's the fourth point about the myths and misconceptions? I'm stumbling over all the M's.
Oh, it's an English teacher's love of alliteration. That's what the problem is. In terms of this one, it kind of struck me in terms of talking to different students, and also when you look again at the material that's online and readily available, the idea that people talk about, oh, I'm doing English Lit A-Level, as if it's this kind of one thing. Whereas actually, although obviously the government sets out the framework of what kind of you need to cover and the dates of texts, etc., there's actually between courses, so between exam boards, and also in your pathway through the exam and the exam itself, there's all sorts of ways that the particular course you're doing is nuanced. So it may well be that you are looking at something, a revision guide, or you're talking to a friend, for example, from a different class or a different college, and they're saying, oh, well, really what you want to do is this. And it may well be that actually you don't want to do that because your exam or your paper has got an entirely different approach to something. So we'll be looking at the way that you kind of peel that back, you unpick that, and you can be really clear in your own head. Actually, I know exactly what I'm going to do in terms of what I'm facing on paper one, paper two, etc. But also that on a question by question basis, I know what's going to get me marks in this particular answer. So you're confident in terms of your organising your revision and producing the kind of end result of your essays that says, yes, I know that I've kind of hit those marks with that essay.
Yeah, that's so important. I remember, this isn't about English literature, but when I was at university, I took this paper in the second year, and it was called The Regional Geography of Melanesia. And Melanesia is this area of islands in the Pacific Ocean near Polynesia. It's kind of between Polynesia and Australia, and it's made up of places like the Solomon Islands and Vanuatu and Papua New Guinea and places like that. And all the way through this course, I really, really, really struggled until the night before the exam, and I was reading through my notes, and I saw this quote, and I realised that this quote came up time and time again in this course, and I realised that quote, it basically summarised the lecturer's philosophy behind the course. And when I took the exam, I was actually having really struggled to kind of got two twos and thirds all year because I just didn't quite click with the course. Actually, it was my most successful exam at university ever, and I got first in the essays that I wrote. And it was because I'd just understood what the examiner wanted from me, what their kind of philosophy was. And I think that's what you're driving at here, isn't it? It's so essential to understand the approach. And this isn't just for English literature A-level, it's for all exams really, isn't it? That you need to understand the approach, the philosophical approach that the examiner is wanting you to take. And if you can understand that, then you can give it to them. In other contexts, I call this like learning to think like an examiner.
Yes. Yeah.
It's just essential, isn't it? Because if you don't do that, you won't get the marks that in the masterclass you'll be talking about how you can decode that and really understand the specifications and the mark themes and all that kind of stuff to understand it. Okay, what's the fifth point, Helen?
The fifth one is a little bit more kind of English literature specific, insofar as there's a belief that using critical quotations, using critics, is always an advantage. And I've seen students try to massively kind of shoehorn lots and lots of pre-learned material from critical essays or kind of articles or things they've come across when they've been revising, saying, well, look, you know, that my assessment objectives or my teacher said I need to use critics. In all honesty, the use of critics, if it's done well, is brilliant. If it's done badly, it actually kind of detracts from your answer. So we'll look at actually what kind of material you should be looking at and how you deploy it if you're going to use kind of those little critical kind of snippets as additional kind of quotations and as additional material to complement your understanding or your interpretation of the text, to make sure that you're one of the people who's using them really well and it's lifting your essay, rather than, mentioned before, you know, this idea of pre-prepared material, rather than thinking, well, I've got my four critical quotations and they are going in this essay no matter what happens and no matter what the question is. So just really being able to tailor your response and recognise independently, actually, this is going to be useful. This is what I can do with it. and having the confidence to kind of say, well, actually, on this occasion, I might have learned this material, but it's not got a place here. I'm going to be confident enough to leave that to one side and pursue this instead.
Yeah, it's really like what we talked about before. It's a difference between a kind of paint-by-numbers approach, isn't it? And like, this is what I am going to give the examiner, like a preconceived idea. Or it's like, this is my kind of toolkit of stuff that I'm taking to the examiner, and I'm going to take the bits out of it to kind of add sparkle in the appropriate places to my essay, kind of thing.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think when you're looking at all of these tactics and approaches, I think people who are listening to this podcast or people who are coming to the masterclass, I think they've already got that step ahead, because they're already proactively thinking about how they can approach their revision, how they can kind of set out and pace themselves and really do as well as they possibly can. The kind of, if there's a sixth myth or a sixth thing that English teachers nationwide and internationally will have heard, it will be the kind of classic of, well, you know, I've got a friend who passed A-level literature and they didn't even read the book. I think that we can just deal with that really shortly in terms of, believe me, one of the bits of advice is going to be, you definitely have to have read the book.
Yes, definitely. Absolutely, definitely. So if people have found this intriguing and helpful, please do check out the How to Revise English Literature Masterclass that Helen is going to be running for members of the Extraordinaries Club and anybody else who wishes to sign up on the evening of Thursday, the 24th of September, 2020. It's happening live at 7 p.m. And so, I mean, if you're listening to this in advance of that time, please do sign up to watch live, and you can ask questions and everything, but you'll have direct access to Helen at that time, and she will really be able to help you specifically with anything that you've got questions about. If you're listening after that time, you can sign up and watch the replay, which will be in the Extraordinaries Club until such time as it needs to be replaced because the government or the exam boards decide that they want to change all the specifications and that kind of thing. Is there anything you'd like to add about the masterclass, Helen?
No, I think I'm looking forward to seeing people there. I think the live element of it will allow for a kind of question and answer session at the end. So please, if you're attending live, do have a think about those things. And I'm just looking forward to kind of working through those processes to make sure that everybody walks into each exam knowing exactly kind of what their strategy is and how they're going to approach that.
And for people thinking, it's September, why on earth do I need to be learning how to revise now? What would you say to them about that, Helen?
I think initially one of the things I do with my classes is to start off by letting people have a really clear idea about where they want to end up, because unless you know where you're going, it's those kind of journey metaphors, you can't kind of make your way there effectively. So if you're starting year 12 or if you're kind of pulling things together in year 13, knowing actually how you're approaching this material and where you're wanting to end up should be influencing how you approach your classwork sort of every day, how you actually work on your essays on a kind of week by week basis, how you make notes about things, what you choose to kind of save or highlight or bookmark, what you think, well, this is really interesting, but this is for my interest, rather than I'm going to spend hours and hours and hours on this and then realize later down the line, well, hang on, that was all context, for example, and this question doesn't ask for any context. So it's just really being able to be in an informed position now where you can map your way through what can otherwise be a huge and overfacing amount of content.
Yeah, so basically you shouldn't be doing this stuff 2 weeks before your actual final exam. If you do it now, you'll train yourself in the kind of thought processes and the analytical techniques and stuff to be able to do really well in the exam without having some kind of big panic at the end. So it's a kind of long-term strategy that's going to save you time over the time until you actually do take the exam. So even if you're at the beginning of year 12, would you say it's a good idea?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us today, Helen. If people would like to sign up for the How to Revise English Literature Masterclass, whether that's to do it live on Thursday, the 24th of September, 2020, or whether to watch the replay, you can find the links to this, the link, there's just one, not many, to the sign-up page, in the show notes for today's episode, and you'll find that on my website lifemoreextraordinary.com, or you will find that if you're listening to this in a podcast player, you'll find the link in the notes, the details that go with today's episode. So thank you to Helen for being here today, and thank you to you for listening. Have a wonderful day.